Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and accessories. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by the rest of my Hong Kong action star compatriots. John Moltz is here. Hi, John.
Dan, my new DJ name is Obligatory Khan.
Oh, my God.
Guy English is also here. He's
Guy,
the one
you can't complain every time I get to go first.
I was so excited that I was going to get a Star Trek reference in, like, right off the top. And then I got sniped.
Find another one. How hard is it going to be for you to find another one?
It is ridiculously easy to make Star Trek references with this show. This episode is replete with
You're not going to have a problem.
No, this is not a difficult thing for me to do. Also, I love the episode. Just to jump ahead and
ruin
what you had to say. Yeah, exactly.
All right, fine. Well, this is going to be a short one.
It's not, because I'm doing the recap.
Oh, God.
That was the recap right there.
That's where I go on mute and roll the chair away and go get a snack or something. we are here to discuss Legends of Tomorrow, Season 5, Episode 5, entitled Mortal Kombat! And Guy English, the one, the only, recapper extraordinaire, master of the dark recapping arts, is going to take it away.
So we start with the first frame being mostly black.
I'm out.
Subsequent frames get lighter.
Sound of refrigerator door opening.
John is dying, and they rush him to the infirmary. Our shapeshifter 80s rocker Charlie wants to head for a jump ship, but she's intercepted, and after having a weird communication with something that sounds pretty evil. The mission is in Hong Kong, 1997, pre-handover to China. Just a little historical note. Used to be owned, quote-unquote, by the UK, and in 1999, it was handed back over to China, and that's why Hong Kong, to this day, remains a special economic zone within inside China. Hence all the protests, and I've got about an hour and a half that I could talk to you about that.
Anyway, you're learning something here today, audience.
Yeah, no,
that's
I really
right,
could.
Yeah,
I
learning you, whether you wanted to or not.
I know, people are going to be shocked. I am actually not as dumb as I appear in most places. I am actually...
He's also closer than he appears in the mirror, just so you know.
That's just because I put on some weight. But yeah, anyway. On a motorcycle, rides up Genghis Khan, Noonien and Singh. And somehow, there's a... See? Even my notes have Star Trek references in them. And somehow, there's a giant gunfight in a bar after the Hong Kong version of Charlie's Angels show up. And it is 100% a love letter to John Woo and all of the Chinese action movies of the 90s that made what we know to be action now a thing. Like, honestly, if you haven't seen these movies, you can't have The Matrix without Hard-Boiled and those kind of... The Killer. Yeah. The Killer especially. Yeah. Like, you really, really can't. It's amazing, and I love that they took the time to... To be perfectly honest, I was surprised that we haven't seen it before, because so much of Arrow even just takes on that, like, I'm just going to storm a compound and murder everybody. It's very, very Hong Kong action movie. Anyway, B and Charlie have been getting it on. Whatever, I'm skipping over a whole bunch of stuff that just doesn't make sense and it's not important. But anyway, B and Charlie have been getting it on. How is it with a shapeshifter is exactly the right question to ask. And I think that's really the only pertinent question to be asking. Everything else is like, whatever, that's between you two. But just for science, what was that like? Because it seems... It's intriguing.
It's like, yeah, those are the two things, right? Right, shapeshifter and Mr. Fantastic.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Odo from DS9. Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. All I've heard.
There you go. See, you did it.
How
long did it take?
It took zero amount of time.
I don't know. I've heard from Sue. He's only Mr. So-So. leave that in. Do I cut it? And we leave that up to you guys.
No, you gotta. No, you. What are you? Are you joking? We do the show live, baby. We don't cut anything.
Oh no.
Yeah. Anyway. After infiltrating Khan's book club, where he killed a cop, Charlie has another and far more extreme communication with something evil. In fact, it's so evil that it's sort of warping her look, her physical being. The Khan motorcycle gang has evolved into using scooters, and they're using them to beat the Hong Kong traffic so that they can get to Prince Charles, who is visiting due to the handover preparations that are going on. B and Charlie stomp Khan, and B, yes. Oh my god, B managed to B manages to solve the unwinnable situation by stopping bullets with his air powers, which he thought were he previously set up in the episode was an impossible thing to beat. Very Kobayashi Maru situation going on there. Charlie reveals to the gang that she's to our gang, to the good guys, that she's one of the old fates, and her sisters are coming for her now that she has. Now that the crisis has stitched all of the worlds together, they're all sort of co-located in the same place, and they can, I guess, sense her presence now, which is ominous, to say the least. In the B-plot, John Constantine is sick and dying, but he's going to summon the demon who did it to him. He lands in some weird other world with Astra. He tries to bargain with her, but it's inconclusive. John tried to score a poor but innocent, very funny, scary, poor but innocent, very, very funny child into wishing that he got better to use the fairy godmother power that Nora has. That did not work out well, but I did enjoy the scene. I love the scene where he's just yelling at a young girl. It's like, oh, that had to be brutal to film. And they shot it from behind her head. Yeah. I hope it's not actually her. Maybe it is. But, I mean, he is giving it, like, 110%. And it is like, oh, that's horrible. Like, that poor young actress is going to have nightmares. Anyway. John is running out of options, and he's sort of becoming more and more assertive that he's not going to surrender to his illness. After a conversation with his walking cane, John finally realizes that he's been pulling an Ollie and being a giant dick to everybody. So he joins his pals for dinner, which is nice because, you know, Ray and Gary are the exact opposites of John. Like, I love this little setup. Like, these are the two most innocent. Ray is innocent and earnest, but not stupid. And Gary is all of the above, plus being really, really dumb, but full of heart, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, it's an interesting balance to a very acerbic character. It's a good recipe, and it sort of works well in a weird way. In a touching dinner scene, John, Ray, and Gary share their feelings with each other, and John finally accepts his death. And it turns out, during a toast, that he's poisoned himself. We're back in the netherworld with Astra, and during a very brief conversation, she manages to reconsider after he... I don't even know if he pleads his case so much.
Yeah, he just sings Scarlet Affair, right?
Yeah. He sings a song that was very meaningful to both of them while they were alive. And she's, you know, still got a soft spot. She still loves him. So, and he has, in fact, and this is pertinent because it's going to drive the plot for the rest of the season, I guess, he's promised that he can take the Wave Rider back and change time. I don't know if he mentioned the Wave Rider, because at the very end he says he wants the loom.
He's
going to use the loom to do the thing. Presumably. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, and correct all of the things that went poorly for her in her life, which is understandable from a demon's perspective. Like, it's weird. It's a little bit trippy, but I kind of get the motivations going on. Like, if you're a demon, then that is a selfish motivation, and he's played on that. He's got a selfish motivation, which is, I don't want to die. And it's an interesting balance of, like, we can align those motivations in order to, you know, keep going, which is very, very, very much on point for, or in alignment with the Constantine comics from the 80s, I think. Mm-hmm. Like that, the storyline where he has cancer and basically has to make deals with every devil he can find. Anyway, that's our episode. And it was a lot more fun than I made it sound. But but that's only because I put the Constantine plot at the end, which, understandably, is like a little darker.
There's so much great in this episode. And I think I agree with you. I have someone who watched a bunch of Hong Kong action flicks in like my early mid-20s. All the homages, the dove flying past as Genghis Khan walks in, the toothpick he's chewing on the whole time, the double guns, the doing the jumps and stuff, like slow motion everywhere.
Yeah, the fights were
great. And I'd say the bullet stopping thing at the end, I felt like was probably a Matrix.
I can stop bullets, bring it
full circle.
So there's a lot that's great in this episode. Special credit to Terry Chen, who plays Genghis Khan here, who is basically all over the place these days. You may have seen him on he was on The Expanse. He played Prax on The Expanse. There was a PI character on Jessica Jones in the second season, played.
Oh, okay. I didn't recognize him.
Yeah, because he's got the stupid hair. He's got the very clearly fake hair and fake mustache, which is great because I love that they play that, but like, we're not even going to try to make this look really real. Like,
no, that's the whole point, is that it's not supposed to look real. Also, I mean, Go ahead.
Oh God, guys!
No, it's a dumb joke. They're feeding him scenery by the 2x4. That's it. That's why I'm interrupting you. So just a dumb joke.
I mean,
Sorry,
the accent is like, it doesn't sound like, you know. I thought about like, oh man, how are they going to do this? Is it going to be like? But it doesn't even sound like a take on an existing accent. It sounds like evil, you know, random evil. You know, it sounds closer to like Vandal Savage than.
Yeah,
really,
I know. I thought a lot about Vandal Savage during this episode,
which is.
But I was thinking those three characters that you mentioned. Well, the two that you mentioned, and including this one. So the guy from The Expanse, who is just like a father who's trying to get his daughter back, and then the guy from Jessica Jones, who is just a dick private investigator who is a real jerk, and then this character who's just sort of a, you know, cartoonish villain chewing up scenery. That's a great collection of.
Oh, and he's on a ton of other stuff too. I first saw him on the sci-fi show Continuum, which was the Canadian show in which he played a time traveler who's also kind of a jerk.
I swear to God, this is not an intentional Star Trek reference, but I guess it is. The guy, oh my God, I wish I could remember the actor's name now, but I didn't even prep for this at all. The guy who's playing the pilot on the ship that Picard is tooling around in also plays the emergency medical hologram. Like, that guy is probably having the time of his life just because there's so many weird and varied roles for him to play.
Oh, yeah.
It's great. It's really, really broad, and it's wonderful. And I can't help but think that this show offers that to so many actors. Like, why do you want to come and be a goof?
Yeah.
We've got a place for you to come and play. Like, the dumbest thing you ever wanted to do, well, we've got that, and we're going to ask a little more of you. And it's wonderful.
He was apparently on Arrow back in 2013 as just like a soldier.
I believe it. That sounds right.
Yeah.
I believe it. Getting stuck with an arrow is not as fun as getting to play Genghis Khan. Like, that's.
Yeah, I'm sure he probably went down quickly.
I was going to say at the same time, the fact that he got to, beyond that, we also have Courtney Ford gets to reprise her Marie Antoinette role this week in kind of a hilarious one scene. And again, you know, an idea of like, well, if you cast out somebody as that character, you probably don't get to reuse them, but like, hey, she's a regular. We can stick her back in the costume for a one shot,
and it's I'll bet that's fun too.
Yeah, sure. Right? Yeah, and it was funny. It was a good. It was It was an enjoyable, amusing scene and a good deploying of that character and that actor, who also only appears in one other scene this week, right? So,
right. Yeah, she's used very sparingly right now. Again, so is Sarah, but I believe Katie Lotz directed this.
She directed this episode, right? Yeah, which is why she was not around for this one or the previous one.
But
she appears briefly at the end to complain about the scooters being a menace, which I really enjoyed.
Yep.
As anybody who's ever gone to a town with those scooters knows.
I know. I didn't go into the scooter thing, but it is hilarious. And it leads to our moment of, what's his name? Screaming Khan. What's his name?
Nate.
Like the Silver Nate. Nate. Thank you. Yeah. There's too many characters. I get confused. when he finds his scooter all beaten up and he's just like, Khan! Like, it had to happen.
You knew it was coming. It had to be in there somewhere.
Yeah, of course.
I love that all the scooters have machine guns mounted on them, of course.
Yeah, it's like, it's perfect. It's perfect and
really
awesome.
A great attack vehicle.
It's a terrible attack vehicle, and that is why it's amazing.
I love it, like, when they're doing the assembling thing, like, when Khan just comes up in the traffic jam with his scooter, and then, like, all of the other scooters come behind him. They have a shot, like, a totally gratuitous shot of some dude doing a jump trick on his scooter.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, why?
There's a guy on, like, the roof of a car with the scooter. It's pretty great. It's pretty great.
It's pretty awesome. Like, that scene, here's the thing. That scene is not cheap. And you need to explain that kind of spending to somebody. And what do you tell them? Well, we've got Genghis Khan on a bunch of scooters with machine guns mounted on them. And you've got to trust me on this. It's going to be awesome. And we need to shut down a street in Vancouver. Like, that has to go by City Hall. And they have to be like, okay, I guess.
Yeah, but they don't need to be like, well, we don't think the scooters are the details
of the plot.
Maybe not. Maybe not. I just love that going by the mayor's
desk. In this case of this show.
Yeah, I don't know. I just love the idea of it going by the mayor's desk. And he's like, yeah, I'm in. Signed.
I love this show. Sure.
Yeah.
Let's not forget Nate's scooter is named Scoots Magoots.
Scoots Magoots.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect.
That Ava has created the prognosticator to help them track down the encores, which no one except for Ray cares about. Everybody is way more into the scooter.
Ray is the most loving and giving character I've ever seen on TV. He's in for it all. He's great.
Yeah. I enjoy Nate and Bayrod's man-to-man talk in the car, which you discussed, but mainly just the, again, like, we've talked a lot about how, like, you know, relationships are handled as adults in this show. And, you know, the advice, first of all, I love the tied up thug in the back seat who's like, maybe it's not about you, man. Right. Like, you're like, oh, I guess he's got a point. And they just have like a, you know, a not again, the non-toxic man-to-man relationship, which is like, maybe you should just ask her. And he's like, yeah, that's a good idea, you know? Like,
right, yeah, yeah. So just, I mean, I elided it just to talk about the shape-shifting thing, because that's kind of funny. Which is, you know, when Captain Kirk meets his doppelganger in Star Trek VI.
Right.
Similar kind of thing. I could do this all day.
Mm-hmm. I know.
There's a Cap reference. I know.
There is a Cap reference, right? He calls Ray Captain America.
That was one of the conversations that I found really interesting. I like the way that they handle interpersonal relationships on the show a lot. It's silly. They're calling each other out and they're being goofy about it, but it is never insincere and it's never hurtful and it's not played in any way other than just sort of a genuine excitement for each other and a little bit more like if there's an angle on it, it's that the person asking the question is being awkward about it, or that the person the question is being asked of is uncomfortable sharing it. Like, there's no shame in any of the relationships themselves, and I think that's
right. I mean, like,
a really positive kind of I like even
Bayrod talking to Charlie, you know, at the end, right, where he's like, I liked you and you left and I was hurt, right? Like, but you know, I'm not gonna, I'm not going to stop you from leaving or anything. Like, here's the time traveler and all that jazz. And like, I just want you to know, I just want to communicate with you how I feel, but I'm not going to be like, and you know, they're both awkward about it at times, but it doesn't feel, it feels like a normal sort of, yeah, that would be an awkward situation to be in, not like a manufactured, like, oh, this person's right. not telling them a secret for a reason. It's like, nah.
Right. I specifically liked that after the whole shootout scene where he stops all the bullets, Matrix style, they hug.
Yeah. Right.
They don't have a passionate kiss of like, okay, now we're going. Like, right. It's just a hug. And then they walk away and they're joking about the toothpick that had been in Genghis Khan's mouth. And he's like, no, I don't. That's gross.
Yeah, they have good chemistry.
I want nothing to do with
that. They have really good chemistry in that scene.
Right. Yeah, it's lovely and it's really, really great. And I liked that specifically that they avoided the I feel like I say this every week, but they avoided the trope.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Charlie impersonates Prince Charles, and the real Prince Charles is with Mick, who is on his beer break. And there's a great
in his only appearance.
His
this
only
episode.
Appearance this week, but I enjoyed that he, as he tells Prince Charles to like shut up and listen to like whatever loud rock music he's playing. If you watch the actor playing Prince Charles, his like lip trembles like kind of a bit. It's a subtle thing, but
I miss that
a guy who appears in like two scenes and he does a very good job with playing that character, even though he looks nothing like Prince Charles.
He doesn't like that was gonna say no, he really doesn't look anything like him.
But also Prince Charles does not dress up in a weird faux Navy costume. Whatever.
I mean, technically he is a he's a naval officer.
I know. Commander, I mean, right? Yeah, I know. I am Canadian. He is my king in waiting. But
man, what a long wait.
I mean, he has my cell number. He can call me whenever he needs, and I will serve as his loyal knight. Just the way it is.
I don't want to.
He doesn't always dress up in a costume.
I don't want to call you, guy. But as I've just texted you, in fact, he was wearing uniform at the handover of Hong Kong. So. Out British Commonwealth, mother.
Wow. Did you just edit that yourself?
Did
you just swallow that word?
This show is nothing if not historically accurate.
I just use Google, guys. Come on.
That's very, very true. So I'm very, very sorry, Dan. And
I guess I get your position as being a knight, is what you're saying. I think that's how that works.
Yeah. Right. Yes. You can definitely have my position of being a knight of the British Empire such that it is, and you are 100% with my blessing, the avatar of colonialism around the world. So that's all on you.
Bloody hell, that really backfired.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm just gonna blame everything on you. So but mostly because I'm mad that, that's the exact costume he's wearing in the show. That is like, also, in this photo, have you noticed how coordinated those umbrellas are?
It's, you know, they don't mess around, man. They don't mess around.
Yeah.
I mean,
they do a little now, but back in the day, they had it tight.
I was going to say, there are a couple interactions with Zari this week, which include her researching a bunch of history, which impresses Nate at one point, even though she apologizes for like horning in on his territory. And he's like, no, that's fine. You know? And like, he confesses to Bayrod at one point that if there were a female version of Bayrod, like he'd be super into her.
He doesn't just confess. He's like, oh, absolutely. And then he just keeps rolling, which is, I love that move. Again, something about the show I really love is like, very attractive. Moving on.
It's a yes and situation, I feel like, a lot of time.
Exactly.
And Zari does mention that the donut that she ate last week gave her visions or something. So apparently she did remember some of her past, but not all of it.
Yeah.
So anything else?
I mean, how does all of this tie together between John's insanity and, I don't know, like donut eating visions and this loom of destiny? Like, these are three plot points or plot threads that are really hard to imagine how to weave together.
I mean, you know,
well, sorry, the loom, John and the loom make sense.
And the loom and replacing Zari's memory could also make sense. In fact, in some ways, it seems like a hearkening back to season 2. Was it with the Spear of Destiny, where they had the spear that could change?
Season 2 of Legends was one of the greatest seasons of TV ever made.
I mean, I would say it's not as good as season 3 or 4, but yes.
No, I'm joking.
Season 2 is when they have the Legion of Doom, and they steal the Spear of Destiny, and they have the alternate history in which Sarah works for them and all that. So.
Yeah, that is where they started turning things around. I'll give you that. Yeah, mostly because they decided to go for scenery chewing, and they got all of the best villains that we'd had in the Arrowverse and just gave them screen time.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, hey, can't go wrong with that.
Go with what works.
Right.
Any other comments about this week, or should we move on to our ritual? I hear no comments.
I'm good with it. You know what? Every time you ask for no comments, we don't have a thing that we say, and we just rely on dead air.
Yeah, to get us. I know. It makes for great podcasting.
I know.
Perfect. Yeah. That's what people tune in for.
Right. Just dead air.
On this podcast, they'd rather have
the dead air. It's probably better than most of our jokes. So, yeah.
Guy, you wanna tell us your rating?
It's a biff. You know what? This is a biff in space. This is a biff in space that has been marooned on a planet.
Oh no!
For 40 years, and all it's had to eat is these weird little SETI eels.
I see what you did there.
It's reading Moby Dick over and over again. Mm-hmm. It's a good. It's a well considered.
Yeah. I think
it's fun. Honestly, go ahead.
What you're saying is it's a biff.
You keep missing the mark.
What?
Like a poor marksman.
Like a poor marksman.
From hell's heart.
You're going to have to come down here and finish it yourself, Dan. You're going to have to come down here and finish it yourself. Anyway, it's going to take me 2 days to finish this review. That's in code, by the way.
Is it going to take you 2 hours to finish this review? Because that's still too long.
It's still way too long, yeah. I really enjoyed this. I like all of them. We spent a long time complaining about the weird and really stupid interactions that happened on a lot of other shows. Without, you know, they were like, look, you're lying, and now there's a secret, and like, what does that mean, and what's the emotional cost of that? This show doesn't do that, and I love it for it. It's fun, it's goofy, and I'm a huge fan of 90s action movies, specifically Hong Kong action movies. Like, and this, like many other episodes, is a love letter to exactly that form of cinema, and I really appreciate it. It's a very, very strong biff for me.
John, what about you?
I will also give it a biff. Yeah, I mean, the references are hilarious, really. They're great, and it's, you know, watching Arrow fights, you sit there and you look at the dynamics going on and people jumping and stuff like that, and you think, oh, they spent a lot of time in that, and you can admire it. And then in this, there's like a whole other level that's like they're doing, you know, I don't think it's, you know, up to the best of the Arrow fights in terms of choreography, but it's still quite good, and there's this whole other thing going on too. So I don't know, I take my hat off to them.
Yeah, I think that the
bonus thing points for being for directed by Katie Lotz, first time director. And
yeah,
very, very intricate, and definitely an eye for what's great in 90s movies. I don't know. I haven't looked at her IMDb in ages, but I believe she was a professional dancer. And I think you can see that from a lot of the choreography that went on here. Anyway, great first time job, just amazing. And I don't know. I can't say enough good things about it. Sorry, Dan.
In the interview I was reading with some of the producers, they mentioned specifically that when they were like, you know, figuring out this episode and having her direct it and all that, that like, you know, she's really good at fight scenes because she is so good at choreography and, you know, physicality of those fight scenes. So like they looked with an eye towards that in terms of like what things is she good at that like she could bring like expertise to bear on. I think that's part of the reason that she ended up directing this particular episode was that it meshed well with like the skill set she had. So yeah, full credit to that. I think for me as well, this episode is Biff. I mean, it's really ticks a lot of boxes. It's fun. It's got great moments of hilarity, great fight scenes, just like really an homage in so many ways, like so many of the previous episodes, like the you know, the summer camp episode from last year was an homage to horror movies, and this year's slasher episode, right? Like, you know, I love when they lean hard into that. And I think to John's point about the fight scenes, there's so much more variability with these, right? Like an arrow fight scene is fundamentally always going to be about the same thing, which is Oliver shooting arrows at things or punching someone.
Oliver,
right?
Oliver shoots somebody with an arrow from 3 feet away.
But so, like, you know, these scenes involve, you know, there's so many more set pieces you can do. There's so many more characters that can bring their angle to it. There's so many just huge number of options and a huge amount of variety that they can throw into that. So I think that's one reason it always feels fresh, because it's not like we're trying to rely on, even, you know, looking at other superhero shows, right? Like we talked about this, like The Flash, he's got to run real fast, right? Like everything's going to come down to that eventually, or something related to that, or even Supergirl, she might have a variety of powers, but like I feel like a lot of those scenes devolve into similar sorts of things. Whereas the Legends are so varied, and we have so many that don't even really have typical powers.
Yeah, or you can put Mick on the bench for an episode. Arguably one of the funnier guys, just because he brings a lot of he changes up the equation, I guess. And I love the paycheck that guy, what's Dominic Purcell, got for this episode. He basically is like, okay, I've got what, 30 seconds to shoot a scene? Sure, I'd love it. Like, I honestly think he's probably just mostly hanging out on the set drinking beers just like Mick would anyway, and I think that's great. They have such a wide, broad, varied cast, and so many interesting things with them that
they figured out a formula, right?
Right.
And
is it a formula, or
bit of a formula to it? Because I mean, they do pick kinds of movies and say, okay, this episode is going to be a riff on something. I mean, they do that. They do that a fair amount. I mean, they don't do it every episode, but they do that, you know, quite a bit. And so I think, but I think that's fine. I think it's perfectly okay to do that. I mean, that's kind of what this show is about and kind of why we like this show. And in a way, I wish that Arrow had done more of that. I mean, I always wanted them to do more like trick shot stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were always, you know, they basically, he used the bow as like a gun. And was constantly, you know, every once in a while he would use, you know, especially like, you know, like a repelling arrow or something like that. But for the most part, he was just shooting people in the chest with arrows. And I would rather have him, he did one or two, like he did that one behind, I think he did it like a shot without looking that, but that was like,
that was
in the run, right?
After, yeah, like, I remember being so excited about it. Yeah. He just does it behind his back. Yeah.
So yeah. I feel like, you know, they could have been a little bit more imaginative with the fight scenes. They mostly just kept trying to go bigger in terms of like production.
Right. Sure. Yeah, no, I agree. But, you know, they do what they can with what they have at their disposal. All right.
When all you have is arrows, every problem looks like a
bullseye.
I would have
like a minion who doesn't have a name who can die.
Look, you know what? To John's point, I would have loved it if there was a bad guy running away and he was far away and Ollie angles his bow up to like 45 degrees and just lets one go and it just
really
sticks
far,
in
yeah.
his calf.
Yeah, like Legolas, like it just,
yeah, exactly. Like some weird shot that's like, what the hell? And you know, say, well, I'm good at my bow. So
yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, we will next week. We are taking a visit to Mr. Parker's cul-de-sac, which seems to be a Mr. Rogers riff, with Ray playing the part of Mr. Rogers in some way, which seems about right. So we will reconvene next week to discuss that. Now I think we are gonna jump to a superhero sweep of something. I don't know what it is, but you're gonna find out.
I don't know.
Here we go.
Who's got topics?
I will say there was one thing that did come across that we talked about very briefly. Excuse me, which is the bat suit from the upcoming Robert Pattinson. Which we there were many feelings about on the internet, including a lot of people like pointing out the similarities between it and the Daredevil's costume on the Netflix show. But also,
so this is the second. This is the second image, right? So this is the image. There was a
reveal
that was like dark. I mean, that was purposefully released.
This was
a
set. Someone snapped this pic from set.
Yes.
And it involves like it's like a very bulky armored costume, with something on the. We still don't know what those are in the forearms. Maybe they're arrows. Maybe they're servos. It's kind of hard to tell, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it looks somebody I've seen some claims that it is inspired by the Arkham games in its look.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I also don't care. We've seen enough.
You're we've on the wrong show then.
Okay, look. We've seen honestly, it was what, 89 that Batman first became armored, right? Batman with Michael Keaton, I think, was like the first let's armor up Batman. And you know why? It makes sense. It reads well, but it's weird. And yet that's sort of the way we've gone ever since then.
My only complaint is not enough nipples.
Yeah, I mean, what, in life?
Leaving that one there.
Yeah. I'll come over if you want. I got two for you right here.
All right, wait. No, that, you're supposed just, to leave it. Just you're two? Supposed to leave it.
Man, I love. I love pushing Dan to the edge of like deciding whether or not he's going to have to edit something.
Oh man,
it's the game I play on this show every week. Yeah, a little bit. No, but I don't. I'd like to see a less armored, more maneuverable sort of Batman.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with some armor, but when he looks like he can't move, that seems dumb.
No, I honestly, Daredevil season 3 or whatever it was, like season 1, 2, when he's just in the black suit and he's got his like ropes around his wrists and it's like the headman, like that guy looks like he's gonna mess you up a lot. You know, maybe save the armor for the power up stage. I don't know, like get defeated and then armor up or something. I don't know. But I mean, just defaulting to a giant armor with a whole bunch of gadgets on it is sort of Batman in that, like, the utility belt basically just had everything that he ever needed. But it's
to the point here. I will say we don't know at what point in the movie. Mm-hmm. This appears could be at the end, right? Maybe he does spend some time in a something that's more, you know, maneuverable or more like cobbled together. I'm still unclear about. I guess this is some of this. Also, people are referencing Batman Zero Year, which like is sort of a origin story. I mean, I don't know. Are we going to do another origin story for Batman? Everybody knows how Batman...
Everybody knows he was bitten by a radioactive spider. Everybody knows that.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that...
He's the child of a dying planet who landed on Earth and then got bitten by a radioactive spider. That is exact... That's Batman's origin story, after his parents were shot.
Wasn't it a radioactive bat?
I mean, that's how you get coronavirus is the problem.
Yeah.
It's a... let's not talk about that. I don't want to... Don't spread any panic. Everybody's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. It's good.
We are not experts. Do not.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. Do not in any way listen to.
Do not take medical advice from this podcast.
No. I mean, do not even take emotional, personal, or any other kind of advice. Specifically financial. Yeah. Don't do any of that. Yeah.
Anyway, my point being, I think this is interesting, and it's a needle we've seen threaded by a lot of properties in the last couple decades. My personal favorite handling of it actually was, I mean, so either you go sort of the most recent Spider-Man movie route where you just like, we don't even need to explain this. You understand how this works. Or I actually really enjoyed the way they did it in the second, in the Incredible Hulk movie, the Edward Norton one, where essentially the opening credits are kind of like a, like, you know, 1 minute, 2 minute, like overview of how this happened, right? Like, good, you got it set. But there's nobody.
I actually did an episode of
the Batman movie in the last 15, 20 years, right? Like, we all understand what it took for him to become Batman.
Right. It's the death of his mother.
For people who are just learning about Batman.
It's the death of his pet bat. Just drove him over the edge.
That's exactly the joke I was going to make.
We have one brain on this podcast.
Death of his uncle, who was a bat.
Yeah, unfortunate.
Anyway, I don't think we... Yeah, right. I don't think we need an origin story. I'm eager to see what happens. There's a lot of Batman stories to pull from. Guess what? You could write a new one, too. Everybody knows who Batman is. Write something new.
Yeah.
So, yeah. As for the casting, I'm cool with it. I don't know much about that guy, but sure, whatever. He's no Michael Keaton, but nobody's Michael Keaton. So, you know, good luck to all of you.
The rest of that cast is interesting, too. Zoe Kravitz as Catwoman.
She's great. Okay, I take that back. She's awesome. Yeah, I'm excited about
that. She previously voiced Catwoman in the Lego Batman movie, which is...
Yeah.
So I guess that's canon. No, I'm just...
Sure.
Sure.
I'll take it.
Paul Dano as the Riddler. Okay. Sure. Yeah. I can kind of see that.
I saw that.
They renamed him, though, Edward Nashton. I guess, you know.
What?
I roll my eyes a little bit just because, like, again, with Batman villain.
The whole thing is enigma.
Right. Like you kind of just lean into it, right? It's ridiculous. Little... We get it.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Wright as Jim Gordon. I'm hugely
Jeffrey Wright is, I swear to God, one of my favorite working actors.
He's fantastic.
That guy
he's
great. He is amazing, and he is sharp as a tack. Whatever. Everything I see with him, I'm just excited and I'm invigorated by him. He was Felix Leiter in Casino Royale, like the most recent run of Bond movies, and I believe is in the upcoming one. And I swear to God, I would watch a Bond movie that had no James Bond, but was just him as Felix Leiter. I would do that in a second.
He's great. He's great in Westworld. He's good on lots.
Yeah.
He's so good in Westworld.
He's never not been great. I've never known him to be anything less than just really thrilling to watch.
John Turturro as Carmine Falcone.
Yeah, that's okay.
Sure,
another classic
great actor,
great guy.
Andy Serkis as Alfred. Interesting choice.
You know what I was?
Yeah, but he's only.
Do you know what? Do you know what? Do you know what has
motion cap though? No.
I actually exactly. I actually have a leak. Alfred is just Snoke. weirdly connecting universes and explaining.
Yeah, really.
Yeah,
and Colin Farrell as Oswald Oz Cobblepot.
He's too handsome, but okay.
I
honestly, you can't beat Danny DeVito for Cobblepot. I don't think he can.
I love the guy who played him on Gotham.
Or, sorry, the guy that was on Gotham. Yeah. Was great.
He was also really good.
Yes, he was. Man, I wish I could remember his name. Robin something.
Robin Lord Taylor, I think. Yes, Robin Lord Taylor.
That's it. Yes, that's it. Yeah, that guy. Amazing.
He was terrific, really actor. Good. He,
like really, yeah. really bananas good. Yeah.
Definitely my favorite Penguin ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
So, weird over-the-top movie for him. I'm going to have to go with Danny DeVito, but as an actual believable character, definitely the one on Gotham.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is weird because that show is totally bananas. But
it really is.
Yeah.
But he did good. He did good. Yeah. So, I have no idea what to expect from that movie. I guess it's technically a DCEU movie.
Which is weird,
but yeah, I don't know. I guess he's a young Ben Affleck, maybe? Because Ben Affleck was originally supposed to be in a standalone Batman movie, and he stepped aside.
I think we should abandon the idea of a DCEU movie and just enjoy these movies for
not up to us, though. We don't get to just abandon it being a DCEU movie. That's their choice.
Yeah, we do. None of this makes sense. None of it sticks together. They haven't made a compelling case that it should. So why are we trying to stick them together in kind of some
together.
Weird continuity?
I'm telling you what they're saying.
Who cares what they say? Just enjoy the thing for what it is, you know? Do I care that the Incredible Hulk is part of the MCU? Yeah, I guess, because they mentioned it a lot. Turns out Edward Norton does not look like, you know, I don't know what the Hulk serum did to him, but he doesn't look the same after. And it's clearly a little bit of a different character. So
that's not my point is just that, to me, it's a question of are they going to be actually integrating this in some way. Really, I'm just curious, like, does Gal Gadot show up as Wonder Woman at some point, for example, right? Like, is that a play they're trying to make here, or are they just like, you know what, it hasn't worked, let's just toss it all out and start fresh? I'm genuinely curious, because I feel like
it doesn't take place in 1984, does it?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so either, but
I kind of want to. Now
be,
I kind of want
an interesting move, just like, you know, to turn it back to.
I kind of want a period Batman movie now, right? Like,
yeah,
I kind of feel like that would be interesting. I feel like that's a movie.
Gotham by Gaslight?
Well, you don't have to go that far back, but I'm saying, like, if you set it in the 80s or something.
Sure doesn't look like it from that shot.
Though. Oh, no, not at all. Yeah. I doubt it. Sincerely doubt it.
Yeah, so the weird, I mean, I don't know if it's weird, but, like, a lot of the ethos of Batman comes from basically New York in the 70s and 80s, right?
Well, even before that, 30s.
Where?
Yeah, right.
Okay. Yes, definitely that. Like, basically, and I don't mean to call out New York on this per se, but I mean, a lot of the imagery of Bruce walking down crime-ridden streets in Batman Year One, a lot of the stuff from Batman Dark Knight Returns is very reminiscent of a New York during a period of, I guess, crisis, right? And that's sort of not the reality these days.
Yeah.
And it would be nice if we, I don't know how to replant that tree at this point that's growing, but it's growing off of something that is no longer, like, the base of it is no longer the truth, and yet it insists on having a grim, gritty reality as a base layer where every alleyway is just, I mean, they're taking tickets to mug you. It's
very orderly, though.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is stacking order. Yeah. But so it's weird. It's different. And I don't know. I think that's part of why I liked The Dark Knight. My favorite scene in The Dark Knight was when he went to, was it Hong Kong? I think he went to Hong Kong and he attacked and captured, what's his name? The guy that was running the money for the mob.
Yeah.
It was meticulous. It was calculated. He was in. He was scary. He was fast. And he got out as fast as he could. And that was, to me, the ultimate Batman. Like, not just wading into like a war and beating everybody. Just meticulous planning. Incredibly precise execution and just limiting your exposure and just getting the hell out with what you wanted to achieve. It was great. And I'd like to see more of that in this movie than what I suspect we're going to get from a guy with a bunch of darts on his hands.
No, I agree. I think there's... you struggle there with the difference between what it is that Hollywood thinks audiences want to see and, you know, what a lot of people do find appealing about that character.
Yeah, yeah. Give me a heist movie with Batman. Not that he's going to steal something, but that he has to go through the meticulous planning in order to achieve his goal.
Or,
which
or
is ultimately
where he has to be, like, a detective.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I hear he's a pretty good detective.
Man. He's the world's most okayest detective.
He is the world's greatest detective. He just never has to use it because he can solve every problem by beating people up.
Yeah. Also, the rest of the world's detectives are really lousy, so it's a low bar.
Right. Yeah. Punch harder, Barry. Punch harder.
Let's wrap up today with a couple letters over on the letters page, shall we? I'll answer that question.
I shall,
for you.
And
we,
in fact,
yes, we shall. We shall.
All right. Did you look this up, Dan? Because I did.
What am I supposed to look up?
Letters to read.
Oh, I have letters.
Because, shoot.
I'm ready.
Okay.
Come on.
Oh.
Come on.
I'm sorry, man. I forgot.
Reader.
I forgot how professional you are.
Reader, Commodore.
Yep.
Commodore Decker. Asks.
Yeah. By the way, stay away from that Doomsday Machine. And don't mess up my ship.
That's advice you should take.
That'll mess you up.
Yeah.
That'll
mess you up. Decker, if you order my ship to attack that Doomsday Machine, I'm going to have your ass. Don't do that. It's awful. And thanks for the Star Trek reference.
The Commodore asks, what podcast do you guys listen to that cover similar topics as Biff? And he says, try not to say, quote, podcasts about nerd stuff, unquote. I'm going to just go first because my answer is really short. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts. I produce a lot of podcasts, and it leaves me with precious little time to actually listen to other podcasts about these subjects. But I will say, I'm going to look really quickly at my library here. Other than all the fine episodes you can find here on The Incomparable about a variety of nerdy subjects, I would say that I went to look at my list of podcasts and thought, nope. None of these apply. So, no, I don't really listen to any other nerdy podcasts. What about you guys?
I can't wait to hear John's answer. I don't currently listen to any podcasts about superhero stuff. I do listen to a bunch of podcasts. I would say probably mostly about Star Trek and then like a great history podcast put on by the BBC. Called In Our Time.
Oh man, that one is really great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for the tip on that.
And but I used to listen to a show called Issues, which was Mike Essel and I'm blanking on his name. Damn it. Which is terrible because he lives in Seattle.
Yeah. It's important that you get this guy's name more than you name the name of the podcast that people can subscribe to. You're definitely stuck on the right thing.
You can go back and listen to old episodes because they are on hiatus and have been on hiatus for a long time.
Issues. What does it cover?
That was specifically about comic books. Those guys were good, but alas.
Cool. Anyway. What Star Trek podcast do you listen to, if I can ask?
The ones on The Incomparable. I listen to Vulcan Hello, and I listen to Random Trek from time to time.
Yeah. Okay.
Guy, do you want to weigh in?
This was like a call to action to like name actual podcasts. I listen to Vulcan Hello. Scott's awesome. Jason's...
He's
okay.
Serviceable.
He's okay. I'm joking. Honestly, I listen to a lot of the stuff that comes out of The Incomparable. Since even before Jason thought I was real, like, he honestly thought that my name was so stupid I just did not exist until I met him. Thanks, Dan, for the introduction.
You're welcome.
So, yeah, Vulcan Hello, Random Trek is great, and it's really actually fun to be on, because the notion is that you will be assigned a random episode of Star Trek, and while I talk about Star Trek all the time, not a lot of them are great. So it's always a bit of an adventure to just get a random episode and have to talk about it. That's great. And Scott's wonderful. What else? I listen to The Greatest Generation, which is a Star Trek podcast. I mean, literally, the tagline is a Star Trek podcast by two guys that are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. And I think that's sort of similar in some ways to what we do here, which is really lovingly enjoy the material, but don't take it too seriously and try to have a good time. So that's fun. What else? I don't know.
Ed Casey was the other guy.
Ed Casey. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Wait, Ed Casey's a guy that we actually know. Like,
I've met Ed in real life several times.
Yeah, yeah. Me too.
I've never met Mike. And yet I remembered Mike's name off the top of my head.
Ed Casey's a great guy.
That's the aneurysm talking.
Oh, man. I love you. It's going to be a shame when you leave us.
I know. Well, someone's calling in my coin.
Oh, God. Anyway, I guess that sums it up. I'm trying to remember what other podcasts I listen to. There was a bunch. I listened to My Favorite Murder, which is nothing to do with this, but is two women talking about true crime. And it is scary as hell, and I've fallen asleep to that more than I care to admit. And
I'm worried about it.
There's a reason that I'm having very, 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 very seriously deep issues with sleeping these days. It's probably because of that podcast. Anyway, there's a bunch out there. Specifically superhero shows, it's not really. And I don't feel much of a need to do so. Star Trek shows.
Well, I listen to you guys.
That's true.
Yeah.
Ceaselessly.
Yeah. Right. I get my fix by talking to you guys every week. So.
Second letter, which is a follow up from last week, is from reader Steven, who says, "Dear Biff, my assumption was that Sarah's unspecified business in Star City was related to Ollie's funeral follow up and or helping her sister time travel to future Star City. For the Green Arrow and the Canary spinoff pilot. That seems potentially plausible. Timelines are a little weird, I guess, but it's time travel. Timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly. Sure. Yeah. Why not?" But yeah, that's
I'll take whatever excuse they give, and I don't even care if they give one.
I think not. But like, you know, we just want to cover our bases. And finally, a note from our good friend and resident artist, Sam Cook. Who suggests we recalibrate our rating ritual to divide the Biff ranking into more granular Biff rankings. Alex Biff would be a low Biff, John Jr. Biff is an average Biff, and Biff Biff is the best Biff. This wouldn't be confusing at all, and Guy would definitely never have to explain it. You got our number, Sam. You got our number.
I did respond to Sam. I said, "This is the worst idea I've ever heard, and we'll probably run with it until a worse idea comes up."
We should ship laminated cards with the an explanation of them.
With the explanation?
System on it. Yeah.
I don't know how to pick it to you guys, but like re-explaining it in a different way every time is kind of what makes me laugh about it. Yeah.
Yep.
We ship t-shirts and every t-shirt will be different. you get a bespoke explanation of the rating system.
Ooh. Can it be embroidered?
Sure. Yeah. Well, as long as we're making a different shirt every time, why not make it big? You'll get them sometime around 2030.
So long as we're losing money, yeah. Why not lose more money?
Look for those in Star City 2040, why don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a reason that this show is awful. Anyway.
I got nothing else. My fax tray is empty unless you guys have something.
No, I'm all good. Those were the letters I got too. So,
all right. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's episode. We will be back next week to discuss Legends Season 5, Episode 6, entitled Mr. Parker's Cul-de-Sac. Until then, I would like to thank my good friends. Guy English, thanks for being here.
It's always a blast. And when I'm dying of cancer... I will ask you if you've been circumcised.
Man, I can't believe I was going to leave my house to him. John Maltz, always a pleasure.
Without giving too much away, I do know what it's like with a shapeshifter.
Well, we'll leave that tantalizing tidbit for next time. Readers, thank you for following along with the transcripts and putting up with all our shenanigans. And we will see you next week.
So, John, what's it like?
It's not great. It's weird.
It's not. It's the best answer.